Welcome to Rule Breakers for Gender Equality. My name is Nancy Polian, and I'm on a mission to make the top of the business world more diverse and inclusive. Because to me, rule breaking is all about taking a risk. The risk to be yourself and to create your own career path. In 2021, there were more CEOs named Peter than women CEOs in the Netherlands. This is one of the rules that I want to break. Let's see which business leader is breaking the rules today. Welcome, welcome. We've had a little bit of technical difficulties, so I'm hoping that you can all find us. If not, we're going to send you an email and send it through to you again. My name is Nancy Polian. I'm the founder of Branded You, and today I am together with my co-host with the mostest, Wenke.
Thank you.
This is actually our third podcast we're doing together.
Yes.
Are you enjoying them?
I am enjoying them.
Yeah,
sure.
Wenke from Great Place to Work, yes. Telling everybody how to create these workplaces based on trust.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's the biggest thing, right?
That's the biggest thing. In fact, what we do is we make it easy to survey your employees and therefore create actionable insights. And if you are doing well, we can get your company culture recognized as being a trustful company.
And that's the best thing your reputation can basically use.
For sure.
And I am honored. We've got a woman of color in tech here today, Gwen.
Hi.
Do I pronounce it Colander?
Or Colader.
Colader.
Everybody
Gwen?
Puts an N somewhere.
I know, for some reason.
So
I was
going to
say it. Yeah. Gwen Colader. Well, you know, I am so happy that you're here because people always say to me, there are no women of color in STEM or in tech, and you are actually one of them.
I am.
So we're going to talk about that today, and we're going to talk about leadership, what it means to be a role model, and mentoring as well. But first, since I know you're half Surinamese, and what we like to do in Suriname is always ask this question, who's your mother, who's your father? Which basically means, tell me if we're related.
Probably.
Because there's not a lot of people living in Suriname. Yeah. It's a country that's 5 times the size of the Netherlands. You know that. It's 5 times the size of the Netherlands.
Know.
But we only have 500,000 people living there. So
half
everybody,
a million?
Only 500,000. So you can be related to one another. So that's why they asked that question. But in this case, I'm asking you the question because I want to know where your roots lie, where you're from, and what it was like growing up.
Yeah.
As a mixed race kid.
Yeah. Thanks for having me. Yeah, I'm mixed race. My father is from Suriname. He was 19 when he came to the Netherlands. And my mother is from Indonesia. So when she was 2, when she arrived in the Netherlands, my father, very proud Surinamese, goes back quite often or has gone back quite often. My grandmother lived until 8 years ago. So I visited Suriname 3 times myself, but not really raised as a Surinamese woman. Don't speak the language.
You speak Indonesian?
No, I don't speak that either. My mother also didn't really raise us as an Indonesian person. So truly Dutch, so to say, but rooted as well in Indonesia and in Suriname.
Did you always feel only Dutch or did you feel mixed? And I mean, the food thing it's got to be an aspect with an Indonesian mom and a Surinamese dad.
Yeah, the food was no problem.
The food was definitely better.
The food was lovely, of course, and still is, and I enjoy that very much. Yeah, I feel really Dutch, but I also feel my roots inside of me as well. Mm. And also people like to point that out sometimes.
Yeah, because
typically Dutch. But yeah, so I've learned along the way also to ingrain those three cultures in one because, you know, sometimes you feel it in your bones and in your DNA, of course. But yeah, I'm born and raised in the Netherlands.
I think with age, you kind of are confronted with being different and having a different color more. When did that first occur to you?
How I experience it is that, you know, when growing older, you get more questions and I think you're more calm inside, you know, and you have more questions about, you know, where do you really come from and, you know, how things went and also thinking about both my father and my mother born in another country, coming into a new country, how difficult that must be, and how maybe also exciting, but you know, also difficult. So you know, when I think about their struggles, they probably were even bigger than mine. So yeah, sometimes. Well, I'm having more conversation around that.
What did you pick up from those struggles then? What did they told you about the struggles that I faced?
I mean, your mom was quite young. She was two, but her dad might have been as a teenager coming to the Netherlands.
Well, finding his place, of course. Yeah. He has two other brothers, so he's a brother of three people. For the three brothers, he's one of them. And he was the first, he's the oldest, so he's the first one leaving the house.
There's a responsibility that comes with that. Yeah.
So that was, he you know, he has mixed experiences. He has had a fantastic time. He still is having, you know, enjoying himself very much, but also, you know, quite different, quite difficult as being the firstborn, going to the Netherlands, going to university. So, you know, really making his mom and daddy proud, and, you know, with all struggles here and there, and not wanting to share that with your parents at home because they're waiting for him to, you know,
to succeed, to become successful.
So
you're not going to share your struggles that much. I kind of can relate to that. Because I studied in the UK and I would never call my mom to tell her if something was, you know, difficult for me, because I knew that she would worry. So you just don't share.
I have the same thing.
You have the same?
I still? Well, growing older, I'm sharing more. But I've sort of taught myself not to do that.
But what about you? Because you live here from Belgium and Austria. So she was born in Austria. She's exotic like we are.
Very exotic.
Our little Heidi.
Heidi as die Berge. No, I don't know. It gave me a lot of independence, I think. I had a very tough childhood. And indeed, I moved when I was six from Austria to Belgium, which I found very, very beautiful country, because everything was flat and I was not used to that. And thinking about that now, it made me very independent, very independent, because I had to adapt towards so difficult, a different language, a different culture also. So it
But when you moved to the Netherlands, weren't you keeping some struggles from your parents because they were still living in Belgium? And
No. In fact, it felt like I was used to it, and I knew that I was resilient enough to make the choice. So for me, it was not that much of a difficulty, or that I shared my struggles with my parents. In fact, I enjoyed the life in the Netherlands even more than I enjoyed it in Belgium, because I was always very open and very extrovert.
So it's a cultural difference.
Yes. And I think the Dutch culture really matches me as a person more than the Belgian one. So it's very funny. When I go back to Austria, that's where I belong. I really feel connected with the mountains, and not really with the Belgian people or culture.
When do you feel connected? When you know, is there a place here in the Netherlands or where you feel like, okay, this is where I belong?
Well, I'm really fond of Amsterdam. I've lived there for 22 years. So the times when I went back to Suriname went to visit Suriname or Indonesia, I didn't feel like, oh, I'm coming home.
You didn't feel like these are my people.
No, but it's also not a no.
No.
As in, so it's sort of a mixed feeling. I gained 5 kilos when I was so you know,
in both countries.
So that is absolutely something you know, where I feel at home. As in, you know, when you wake up in the morning, you talk about food. When you are eating, you're talking about the food that you're going to do for lunch, and when you're having lunch, you're doing it. So that's probably food, very recognizable for you as well. So, and that's sort of a connect, and it goes in a certain way that I recognize.
But I also think both countries are so alike, because my mom was adopted by Javanese people, so Indonesian people who lived in Suriname. When I went to Indonesia and Bali for the first time, a lot of their nature reminded me of Suriname, because it's so, it feels like paradise. You know, the rice fields, walking around.
It's fantastic.
the way the infrastructure is, just it feels like, I mean, I kind of felt like they were my people a little bit.
Were you born in Suriname?
I was born in Suriname.
And how old were you when
I was five when we moved here in 1978, the coldest winter ever.
in the Netherlands.
Look it up.
I will. But I think that's a crucial age, because I was also 5 years old when we moved.
Yeah.
And then you build like a relationship with your home country or something.
Yeah.
Because do you still have memories around that time when you were five?
A lot of memories. Yes, a lot of memories. And really, it's very, because I don't miss it. Mm-hmm. I really don't miss it. But when I'm there, I'm like, oh, this is what it is.
You feel it. Yeah. You really feel it.
There's a core to it. Yeah. Mm-hmm. No, I have to say, I don't miss it either. But when I am in Suriname, it just reminds me of freedom. I remember being a kid. And you know, when you're in the Netherlands and you're a young kid and it was in the 70s and the 80s, I just remember feeling trapped. Mm. You know, I grew up in an age where there were only two TV channels in the Netherlands. And so it wasn't like we were constantly entertained. You wouldn't go outside because it was cold.
Yeah.
And in Suriname, you would just even play when it would rain. You would just play in the rain.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of going out, socializing with other neighbors, feeling, you know, like maybe you have that when you live in a small village in the Netherlands. I don't know. But it's quite difficult to connect outside of your house. Mm. You know, in that time, I mean, obviously now we're more connected with our phones, but through our phones, but you know, it was difficult then.
Yeah. Yeah. I can imagine. So I'm thinking about the times that I visited Suriname and the things that I, you know, enjoy and feel in my DNA, but also I'm also very annoyed, you know, things don't go that fast.
Cause it's slow.
Yeah. So
the pace is different in different countries.
Yeah.
Those countries.
And that's of course me.
Because, that's the Dutch
side
of you.
That's a Dutch thing. Yeah.
Or when it's not done well.
Yeah. Yeah. Also,
I remember this one instance of a friend of mine going to Suriname, and she went to a store and then she ordered cheese. And I think the guy told her something like, you know, we don't get the cheese till this afternoon. And she was just flabbergasted. She was like, are you kidding me? Or it was something like, we only serve cheese sandwiches in the afternoon. She was just, she couldn't believe that people would just agree to that. But, you know, things are done differently.
Yeah.
So if you look at your life and where you're from, do you recognize that the things that you might be doing differently because of the influences that you've had, the different perspectives that you've had, even though you are very Dutch, but, you know, there's always something that you carry with you.
Oh, I have to think about that. I don't know. What I sometimes feel inside my body is sort of the clash between the Suriname outgoing kind of style versus the humbleness of the Asian people. I sometimes feel my body struggling with that.
Wow.
Because I'm very open and expressive, but I can also, when people least expect it, all of a sudden be quiet.
Yeah.
And that can be a bit difficult for people maybe so where are you now? You know, what are you doing? Yeah, it's a struggle. That's the thing. But really mentioning a sort of a skill or a behavior, I don't know.
Yeah,
I don't know. Probably, but I don't know. I have an answer for it.
So let's get back to you being a woman of color in tech.
Hmm.
Do you know that? I mean, did you know that there were, you know, obviously that this is an underrepresented group?
Yeah, of course.
How do you deal with that? How do you?
Well, the funny thing
is, are people surprised when they, because you've got quite a job title. Can you tell the audience? I love her title.
Well, I work at Hexware, which is a tech company. So we help our customers and clients with the digital transformation and their business processes. So you can compare us a bit with Capgemini, a smaller Accenture with 30,000 people, still growing, and, you know, located globally in the world. So I picked up the role of VP Global Head D&I last year. And it is an Indian company. We're a global company, but it's Indian, Indian roots, deep Indian rooted. Mm-hmm. So there are a lot of brown people there. Mm-hmm. Different ethnicity, obviously, but it's funny. I was talking about this the other day with somebody that said, oh, you're going to do a TED talk one saying, I was looking for the white men come for our organization. And I thought that's quite funny. But it's a very interesting role. I'm very happy to be in this role. I feel that, you know, a lot of things, lived experiences, things that I see that I'm experienced with other people as well. And also the people that weren't there, as you mentioned, versus sort of the intersection with business, you know, because I really, really truly believe that, you know, D&I is not only the right thing to do, it is a business enabler. It's an absolute business enabler. If you leave it aside, you might be successful to sort of a certain extent. But if you really incorporate in everything that you do, in your strategy, in everything that you do in the company, it can be a crucial, imperative enabler. Yeah. So, back to your question. Yeah, during my career, there was nobody like me. Never met her.
So do you feel there's a pressure on you to perform really well? Because I always felt that.
As a
black woman, I always felt like I have to overperform.
Yeah, me too.
Because I've been told.
Yeah, I've been told sometimes as
by
well.
Who?
By managers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that you have to overperform.
Well, that
more is expected.
Yeah, more is expected.
Really?
Yeah.
How did you cope with that?
I was younger then. Yeah. It hasn't happened to me for a long, long, long time.
How old were you?
Gosh, I think 28, something like that.
I think people would still say that.
Do you?
Yeah. I think we shouldn't forget that we live in a bubble.
Mm-hmm.
There's
we
quite
do.
A bubble.
That's true.
Yeah.
Normal,
true,
you know,
definitely.
I think normal organizations, there are still people saying those things that we feel are not very woke to say, but yeah, they would.
Yeah, but when we are talking about leadership and I hear something like that,
That's a weird kind of leadership.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's
interesting. And you know, and sometimes, you know, and I have a lot of good experiences as well, but the bad ones are, you know, being hushed.
Yeah,
being silenced.
Sure. Oh, yes.
How do they
being,
do that? Just doing
just,
this?
Just
like gesturing?
Hush you? Yeah.
Just like, okay, you. Just
yeah.
stop talking.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, but I can relate to that.
Yeah?
For sure. The times that I was told, Wenke, you should choose your battles. Don't be so loud.
Don't be so aggressive.
You are aggressive or you are, too I don't emotional. Know the word in English. It was right after I gave birth to my son and I was really decisive of what I would want to become within a company.
Mm.
And they were like, you are so, what did they say? Pittig. I don't know how to
fierce.
Say
fierce.
Fierce, yeah.
Fierce, but in a bad way.
But fierce
way.
In a bad way, yeah.
But in a bad way.
Yeah. Not like Sasha fierce.
No.
not Beyoncé fierce.
No, not at all. And I was like, oh, really? And I think when I would have been 5 years younger then, it would really hurt me. And at that time, I was like, okay, when you think I'm fierce here, this is not my company anymore.
Mm.
Then you
so,
left.
Yeah, no, I didn't because I got the promotion, obviously. But I was made me think of the fact that okay, but it can be that you won't fit into the culture anymore, and it's not your fault.
You outgrow it. Yeah,
but you have people around you helping you with that. Do you have people around you? You know, could you go to somebody and say, "Listen, I was just hushed in the workplace. What do I do with that?"
No,
you don't.
No,
you didn't. Or do you have them now?
Well, I'm not being hushed
anymore.
But still, do you have
those
people around you who would help you and you can talk to?
I have more of them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But I wished I had some.
Yes.
growing into my career.
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
So therefore, I feel, you know, your platform and other platforms that I'm part of, Roots Inspire from Sergio, I'm not sure if you know him. Very important platform as well. And, you know, my network is growing so fast and steep with regards to D&I. Everybody is, you know, helping and building this community and environment. So,
it is about building a community. I mean, we're calling it a sisterhood. And what I love about Sergio's platform is he is basically, he's got an international platform of people of color all over the world.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Growing
so
fast.
It's growing, really growing fast. Yeah. It's like, you know, you could be Surinamese and work in Mexico City. And he would connect you to a mentor.
Wow.
So it basically is about everything that we three went through, not having the next generation go through it. So if you are, I don't know, a black person living in Singapore, you've had to go through certain struggles because you were the only one. But now you've got a mentor telling you what to look at, you know, how to handle certain situations. Yeah. So that's what his platform is about, which is amazing. And it's about bicultural people. Okay. So what we do with our sisterhood is we connect women to each other, because a lot of the time women aren't visible to each other. You know, like you're saying, you don't have them enough, but you need to know where they are and where you can find them. And so we're trying to make that easier through all of the events that we're organizing. I always look at it like, I remember in the beginning, I thought, well, I'm just only organizing events and a couple of trainings, but now I really see the value of our events. Yeah. I mean, they are humongous, wouldn't you say so?
Yes.
You've been coming to them since 2014.
I think so, since the beginning. And for me, they really were, it's maybe a big word to say, but they were life-changing, because I met other women who were nice. Yes, who were nice and who were professional and who gave me real good advice, because when I used to work in media, there was a lot of jealousy amongst us. And I was trying to find people who could I could learn from, but I also wanted to give. And that's what you are such a great matchmaker, because all the people that are like attending the breakfast or into the mentorship program, those are the women that I could have a beer with. They are just nice and good and very good in their jobs.
So those are the women that we need to make visible so they can help others. But also, you know, I mean, that's you basically. Yes. You're here, you're sitting here because you want to pay it forward. You, you know, realize you've got a role model position. What makes somebody a good role model in your view?
Well, of course, that's personal, I guess. I like fierce women. And I like
attracts like, because most fierce women like fierce women.
I like fierce women. And fierce in a cheeky way sometimes as well.
Yeah.
So, I've been in organizations where it's predominantly male. So where, when I see women in the top, it's sort of natural role model, right? Because you know what the struggle is to come there. And you know what the struggle is to stay there. So,
I think people forget about the last one.
Yeah, because reaching your point, but then staying there.
And feeling good about it, right? And feeling empowered.
While getting punched sometimes. Yeah,
exactly.
And
but this is when you meet your sisters, because they will help you stay there. They're the ones that actually, because, I mean, if it's not even just those leadership positions, even being an entrepreneur, the amount of times that I wanted to quit and my sisters were like, you're not quitting. This is too important what you're doing and we're going to help you.
You know? But I think sisterhood or community is also built, right? People need to, there need to be a sort of certain trust and continuation. And, you know, so it takes time and
investment.
Absolutely. And now this is just booming, right? So be proud. Be very proud.
You should.
I think a lot of women have a lot of benefits from it, gaining from it and giving it.
But it's also, I mean, we find each other on commonalities, but I think we also have to be very clear on what we're going for. Like I've always said from the beginning, if you're not an ambitious woman and if you don't want to be a leader in your field, we are not for you. And it was very clear to me that I wasn't going to target every single woman in the workplace.
You don't have to.
I don't have to. But we do want to target the women and help the women who want it. You know, who say we're ambitious, we want to be in leadership position. We use that word a lot. And it scares some women off. And I'm like, well, then it's not for you, you know?
And it's okay.
Yeah, it's okay.
It's okay.
What does you also feel the time is right, right? Because International Women's Day was, you know, 2 weeks ago. I organized a whole week to celebrate women empowerment, but also to dress equality and equity in our company.
What did you do? Tell
us.
I'm curious to know.
Yeah. So so I did events every day. So on Monday, we had an event about allyship. Because I also truly believe in that. When men can open up a bit more and there is trust and safety to be more empathetic and social and collaborative.
So what was the event? Was it men talking or?
It was a man talking about allyship and sort of, you know, all our participants could be everybody who acts at Hexaware. So that was, you know, how to become an advocate, how to become an ally. On Tuesday and Wednesday, I gave some trainings and a colleague of mine gave some trainings. Zeynep is her name. She did.
Watch out. this is life. Yeah. This happens.
It goes okay, yeah. Right? So Zeynep gave a training about how not to apologize when you don't have to apologize.
Oh, yes. Oh, yeah. Don't
very,
say sorry.
Very, very strong. Yeah. Yeah. And I did the training on self-promotion. So the I Am Remarkable training.
Yeah.
And it was perceived really, really well. And
that's a Google training.
Yeah. It's a, yeah.
And just ladies, yeah, just so you know, we're doing, it's, yeah, because you are, I think you're one of the companies that then took it over and because they tried to
yeah,
get more people
I'm implementing it in the organization. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. So we're organizing a leadership breakfast at Google in case you want to join us on the 25th of April.
Oh, okay.
Where we're going to be talking about that as well.
Okay. Yeah.
Because
fantastic.
It's a lot of, you know, it's roots. A lot of their roots are where our roots are.
Yeah.
When it comes to I Am Remarkable in the way that we talk about authenticity. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's a very powerful training. You see, you know, women stand up, literally. Yeah. It's really cool. And on Thursday, we had I organized a session with female leaders from our customers. And it was very interesting. So it's very powerful to see, you know, our customers speak up. Yeah. And when you bring women together, well, I don't have to explain that to you, of course. When you bring women together, some energy comes loose. Yeah. And we talk about, you know.
Magic happens.
Yeah. About how you get feedback as a woman, how you, you know, promote it, how, you know, how things are in a business as a woman.
Yeah.
So very powerful. And on Friday, I introduced the first ever female awards. So that was really cool as well.
What was the goal of the award?
To put women in spotlight.
Yeah.
So we have 31% of women in the organization. Okay. So we still have.
So what could we win? What could women win?
Oh, a Trailblazer Award. So, you know,
within Hexaware.
Within Hexaware. Yeah.
And not for your customers?
No, maybe next year.
Yeah.
But it was a very good week, and you know, learned a lot from it, got a lot of feedback, and really, you know, you feel the power and sort of the
how do you basically handle that, because we get a lot of feedback as well. How do you process the feedback so it then becomes something that you can take action from?
Well, the feedback was more about we learned a lot.
Yeah.
We felt so powerful. We've never had before spoke about D&I that much. Mm. There was more visibility. Mm-hmm. So luckily the feedback has been mainly positive.
Yeah. Yeah.
But of course there is so much that we can do different next time. But yeah.
And how do you foster that then? Because you had, of course, you had International Women's Week and there was a lot of fuss around it, which is good. But I can imagine as a VP of Diversity, Inclusion and Equity,
it has to be part of the DNA.
Yeah, yeah. And how do you foster that? Because I can imagine around a week, okay, but and then how do you, what's your view on that?
Well, yeah, so we're building the foundation.
Okay.
So, and this is a role started from scratch last year. So,
do you have percentages of things that you want to work towards?
Yeah, so we have one global goal, which is bring the 31% of women to the 40%, least 40% by 2030.
Okay.
Yeah, so, and you can do that through.
Is that ambitious enough? I don't know. Is it?
No.
Well, yeah, but you know, don't forget, it's an Indian company.
Exactly. Yes.
So, and every culture has their challenges and their heritage, cultural heritage. What I feel and see in Hexaware is everybody is very committed to it.
Yeah.
So the goal is 40% by 2030. I changed that as at least 40%.
That's 2030, right? But you know what it is though about these percentages? I was at a event last week and it was about energy, and the energy companies had given themselves a target. They wanted to be independent from Russian coal and energy in 2027. The war happened and it took them 10 months to achieve it. They are now independent in 10 months.
Yeah.
So where there's a way.
Yeah.
It can probably be sped up and accelerated.
It would be fantastic, right?
Yeah.
And in 5 years, I would say we are already there, and we're going to push for more balance even. So
I find it very impressive. We are struggling also with finding people with another background within the company. Mm-hmm. So I now just made it like a bold decision and say, okay, but this is what we have to do now, because otherwise we will just stay the same. So I'm very curious also What's the approach? How will you manage it to...
Well, you need to meet people where they are as well, but you need to bring them to where you want them to be, right? So we're building the foundation, which is based on education, which is based on, you know, learning awareness. What is D&I? What are we doing?
Yeah.
It's not only gender balance, obviously. It's also LGBTQ. It's also, you know, all the
neurodiversity, all loads of them,
everything, right? So we're doing 4 themes a year. Okay. So every quarter we have a focus, which is in Q1, International Women's Day. In Q2, it's Pride, because that's in June.
Yeah.
Q3, we will do cultural differences, ethnicities, and disabilities.
Yeah.
And last year in Q4, I introduced the Diversity Festival of Hexware.
Yeah.
So touching upon all these different topics, also caste and religion, because that's a big thing in India, right?
Yeah,
so also bringing in those local flavors, so to say, because, you know, a global approach won't always work in a regional, in every region. But those are 4 themes that we do during the year. But then we have loads of other events, the basics of training, educating, you know, what is it that we want, doing lots of things with customers, because that also attracts our employees to be part of, you know, those panels discussions and everything. But also trying to
have a responsibility also, because if you don't do stuff with customers, you're not really letting them know what kind of company you want to be.
And they're asking for it as well.
Yeah,
and they're asking for it as well, right? So RFPs, RFIs, it's always included.
Oh, really?
But you also, but this is, you know, I also believe that we need to translate it into goals and targets and accountability. Because if you don't do that, we don't get anywhere. So,
and you can't measure your success.
And so data proofs, right? Yeah. So there's so much to do, and we're doing a lot, and we're building on that foundation. So, you know, monthly dashboards and stuff.
Oh, wow.
So as a woman, here, a woman of color doing, you know, diversity, equity, and inclusion at a big company like Hexware, you're a leader. How do you look at your own leadership? I love that we had an earlier podcast with Gianni Masthoff, who said leadership is a
profession.
It's a profession.
Yeah.
And we're not taught how to be leaders. So how do you keep developing yourself as a leader? How do you, I mean, you were talking about accountability. You've got some of your own, right? So how do you do that? Because, and I'll tell you why I'm asking this question. I've had women come up to me before, and also women of color, who said, listen, I think we need to do more. We need to pay it forward. And they would do one thing. And then, you know, the next year I would ask them to become a mentor again. And they'd be like, oh, I'm too busy with work. And I'm like, dude, you can't just do it once and expect the world to change in one go. You know, how do you stay accountable for what you said a year ago? Do you know what I mean? You've got the targets, but I sometimes feel that, you know, leadership also means following through, you know?
Yeah. It takes some perseverance every now and then, of course. But yeah, of course, it has to do with vision. And if you do it once, that's not really a vision in my eyes.
No.
Depends on what you want to achieve, though. But leadership is a lot of things. If I look at myself, I always think, you know, you're a leader when people tell you that you are one, you know. And luckily I can feel it every now and then that people, you know, confide in me, trust in me, asking me questions and guidance. So that is, of course, very nice. But what I find really important is that my team know and feel that they can say anything to me. And also when one of my team members makes mistakes, I will always back them up as long as they tell me that they make mistakes. Mm-hmm. Of course, sometimes something happens that they don't know about, but then you know as well, right? But if you make a mistake, please tell me. I will always protect you, because I feel that's really important for team to grow and for people to feel safe in a team.
Yeah.
So that is something that I'm really focused on.
We hear that safety thing a lot. In fact, it's I think, in my opinion, and within Great Place to Work, we know that psychological safety is the most important success factor for being a very successful team. but and not to to make a very big difference between male and female leadership, but is it so that, because I hear this a lot from women, my people feel safe and they have the feeling that they can make mistakes. In your opinion, do you see a big difference between men and women, or maybe the lessons that you've learned within your earlier career? Is there a difference in your opinion?
I mean, like men make more mistakes, or
no, that female leadership or women in leadership tend to be more cautious about the fact that their people should be safe enough to make mistakes.
I think men and women don't differ that much.
Okay,
it's the environment that make them choose to go for one skill or another behavior.
Yeah,
that's how I see it a
good
little bit.
Good point. Yes.
So I think if men would be safe enough to be more vulnerable and empathetic, and women can be assertive instead of cold aggressive, because we also have that in us.
Sure.
I think, you know, that would make a better world.
So it has to do with culture, right?
I believe so. Yeah. I know and I know men that create safe teams.
Yeah.
I know them.
Yeah, me too.
And sometimes I also betrapped myself. What is it?
Caught myself
on a thought with somebody a long time ago. Ooh, you're a softy.
Oh, yes.
And I thought, oh, but that's not okay. But that's not okay. No. But that has to do with bias,
of course,
obviously, right?
And what we saw maybe in our earlier careers, we were not used to it.
Raised, you know, being being
to be aggressive,
yeah, exactly, and always and always come through and always put work first and always do.
So that's why I love this whole new generation, because there's this whole new thing out there. You know, there's this thing called the strong black woman, and you can actually see now there's a whole new generation of black women in America who are saying, we don't want to be the strong black woman anymore, because that means you don't see our hurt, you don't see our fears, you don't see our pain, you know, and actually it's worked against us. This is why a lot of even Serena Williams, when she had her baby, people were just denying her pain because they felt black women can handle pain better, you know, when she was having her baby. And sometimes, you know, there's a higher percentage of women, black women, you know, having difficulties or even dying during birth because the doctors don't.
Research shows.
Yes, research shows that. Even in the Netherlands, I think there was a report about this last year. We should look it up and share that link. But yeah, so you're right. Having that whole strong, you have to be
but
in that
also
way.
Also, the
work against us. Yeah.
What they say in the Netherlands, power woman. I really hate the word.
Yeah.
Why should there be power? We don't talk about power men. Yeah. Why should we?
No, we
talk
never
about
use that word. We've
power
never used
women.
It.
Yeah,
it's so.
I read the other day because you know, you also have these, you know, female leadership trainings and stuff like that, which I completely understand the intention. You know, and I think it is good in certain situations. But if we bring women to be trained to become a leader, let we then send men to an allyship training, right?
Yes.
So because to create that equal world is not women becoming to whatever leadership profile we're trying to mold them in, but really try to equal the world.
Exactly.
But to me, it's really about authenticity. You know, I think I also have sometimes difficulties with the female leadership trainings because they're very focused on just female leadership rather than authenticity. So that means that even I, you know, have a lot of male qualities in me and a lot
of course,
you know, then I feel like I'm sometimes not good enough. So I'm trying to, what we try to do in our trainings is really let people just look at themselves and go within and feel like, this feels good for me and this doesn't feel good for me. This is me really.
Yeah.
And this is, you know, because there's like a balance needed.
Yeah, and I think that's very strong and very good. But if you're working in an environment where it's not safe to be authentic, then you have a problem. Yeah. So
you have to run away, I think.
Yeah, or become that strong woman. You know, and sometimes you're just tired of fighting, tired of, you know, showing again and again I'm good enough.
And a system and a culture isn't...
Maybe we should frame it differently then.
Yeah, and it isn't easy to transform. And sometimes you can do your utmost to change the culture, but when you feel that you are the only one who's seeing it or who is addressing it, sometimes it's better to quit.
Well, what I see, so for instance, in Hexware, there's a really great commitment to create that more equalness, right? But what I also see in general when I speak to other people in other companies, and what I see myself as well, is that a lot of people tend to step out of the conversation. They think,
it's not about them.
I like women, you know.
Yeah. And don't want to have that conversation.
I like women. And I like, or I know a disabled person. So, you know, I'm so denied.
My friends are black.
yeah,
black friends.
You know that. And,
that one is a cool one.
Yeah, and their thoughts.
I know them. Yeah. I know them, so I am.
You know, but their thought is quite, I think, generic, because a lot of people then think that the whole D&I discussion or equal and equitable situations are not about them.
Yes.
But we're all part of the solution, right? So I think that is the most challenging thing today, is getting people in the conversation and keep them in the conversation. Yeah. So I'm
and make it a business case sometimes, if that's the trigger.
If that's the trigger, or a target or a quota or whatever, right?
Whatever.
So I think a combination of trying to push yourself to stay curious.
Yeah.
What's the question behind the question? Yeah. Or what do I see there in the eyes? Yeah. You know, so try to be curious.
I love that, because curiosity really is it.
I think so.
Because if you're curious, you know, you're going to invest in the person if you're curious about them. Yeah.
But that takes bravery also.
Yeah. It also takes courage. Yeah. Bravery is the same thing, right?
Yeah.
So also to do that, also openly, right? Yeah. Or question yourself and be brave enough to do that and be committed to it. So those are my three C's that I always push forward.
Repeat them again.
Curiosity. Courage. And commitment.
Yeah.
I will write those down.
Yeah.
So, Gwen, you know, we love that you're here, because, like I said in the beginning, I think you're an amazing role model. Have you currently got a role model, somebody that you consider, or?
God, I find that a difficult question to answer.
Mm-hmm. And I really want to ask that question, because a lot of women say, oh, yeah, Michelle Obama is my role model. But I like to create role models that are close to us.
And I was thinking about it the other day, because I ask these questions in trainings myself. And I thought, what would I answer?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I still don't have an answer. I think it's a combination of the perseverance of my mom.
Yeah.
And my grandmother, my Suriname grandmother.
Surinese, yeah.
And I was looking the other day through, you know, those well-known lists, female leaders in the Netherlands. There is nobody that looks like me.
No.
So you mean the Dutch list?
Yeah. I think there's one or two, maybe in a list of 70 people, which is shocking, you know. And I, of course, have, you know, people that I admire who are not black or colored. Mm-hmm. You know, Shanine Vos, for instance, from Rabobank, I really admire for her.
Courage,
but also vision.
Yeah, yeah.
Because I met her a long, long time ago, and I see where she, you know, how where she's going. So it's really, I really admire her for that. But there are a lot of women that I admire you for building this. I admire you for what you're doing. So I think, you know, that's it for me. I don't have one. And I didn't want to say Michelle Obama or Rihanna or.
So you know, you are part of our mentorship program, and we're doing Women in Tech, and you're a mentor there. Why did you want to be a mentor?
Because I didn't have one, and I know that it would have helped me if I would.
How would it have helped you?
Well, with all the struggles that you face building up your career anyway, and then being a woman, and then being colored, right? So I think. It's tough sometimes out there. So it's nice to have somebody in your corner.
Yeah.
A sounding board. When you have a difficult conversation that you can try it out with your mentor. Get some guidance and get some reassurance of there's somebody there.
Yeah. Who's got your back.
Who's in my team.
Yeah.
Right? And I don't want to say that it was all, you know, tears and struggle, but it wasn't easy.
No.
So it would have been nice to have had somebody.
Yeah.
And if I can be somebody for a person, you know, I'm here.
And the thing is, you know, as we have more experience and we grow older and we've got more wisdom, we can see things happen before they happen.
Yeah.
Like I can already see with a mentee when she's probably not being herself, or when they are being influenced in a different way. I remember listening to this podcast once of a woman who said that she could identify if she had three daughters, and she could identify when her daughter was being treated well or whether the boyfriend was good for the daughter or not. Mm-hmm. And you know what it was? Mm. She says, as soon as my daughter was authentic and she was more herself, yeah. So she wouldn't hide things or she wouldn't chase him. She would just be herself. Then she knew it was a good boyfriend.
Yeah. Yeah.
But as soon as she'd be like, oh, I've got to dress up or I've got to do this, or she would change herself, her behavior. Now, and that's, I always remember that. And that's kind of the way it is with mentees as well. You feel like they're changing too much for the company or their department where they work, their colleagues.
Yeah. Or not, you know, scared to ask questions.
Yes.
Yeah. Scared for the answer.
Yeah. That's, scared for
the consequence.
Yeah. Stigmatized being.
I had that too when I was younger. Yeah. I don't have that anymore.
Neither.
I ask questions even if they're difficult. Yeah, you know, I don't move out of difficult conversations.
No.
But I can imagine, and I've been there, that it can be difficult sometimes.
So, oh my God. Yeah. I mean, I'm giving you this example because it happened to me and it wasn't even that long ago. It was 4 years ago that I had a client, and this client kept changing everything that I offered.
Oh.
And it had to be in their way.
Yeah.
At a certain point, it felt like I had a Pepsi Light version of my course that I was giving there. Mm. And at the end, the client was not happy. They felt that we underperformed with the group of women. So actually, it was Jayani. I called Jayani and I told her what happened. And then she said, you let them touch your being.
Mm-hmm.
You changed for this client. Everything that you believed in, you took away, you know, because there were so many aspects that they didn't want from me.
Should have given back the...
Yeah, so I gave them a stripped down version of what we did as a company and what I did as a, you know, slash coach at that time.
Yeah, but that's also difficult. I don't know how far in your company
I love that Jayani was kind of the mentor for me at that moment to say, don't let that happen to you again. Because
sometimes
I was like...
It happens because you have to do business and you don't want to lose the client. And at that
but
time...
But it made me feel so much better having that conversation with her.
Of course. Yeah. But and at that time you think, oh, but I need this client. So it's very hard to then switch the mindset. I don't need this client. I have to put all my energy in another one. It's the same with companies. And when you work in a certain environment, you think, I have to. And sometimes it's better to put your energy.
But that's where a mentor can really help.
Yeah, sure. Absolutely.
Because I wish I had that conversation with her earlier. It would have saved me a lot of crying.
Yeah. And on the other hand, it's good to walk through those, how do you say it?
Yeah, sometimes you need a dip, right? Sometimes
valleys,
you need a...
Dips.
Ups and downs,
It's needed sometimes, but it could save you some tears.
Yeah, definitely. So what do you do, both of you, to really, you know, feel your true self at work? What do you need, maybe? Maybe that's a better question. What do you need to feel your true self in a workplace? And we know it's all safety and trust, so you can't use those two.
Okay.
What else do you need?
Okay.
Space.
I love that. Space. Ted Lasso. Have you heard of Ted Lasso, this TV series?
Sure.
Did you see the episode where Roy Kent goes over to Jamie Tart and he's like, you're supposed to be on your man in the football place. He's like the coach. And then Jamie's like, no, I'm supposed to give him space. I have to trust that he knows what he's doing. I love that answer that you just gave. Space.
Yeah, but it is what you say. You also need to earn space, right?
Yeah.
So... I like to perform and I like to overperform. I like to, you know, be successful. So for me to get that space, I also need to gain trust, right? So it's all intertwined, I guess. I need honesty.
Transparency.
Transparency and honesty. Very, very important. Humor. A little bit of humor.
Yeah, we need fun.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah, and support.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I think those are very important ingredients.
Yeah. So, ladies, think about what you need to really feel your true self at work. What about you, Wenke?
Ooh, trust, of course, but I was not allowed to say it. I do it anyway. Support is a good one, and I need to be challenged. Because when I'm challenged, I know that I've been trusted to do those things. So a challenge is, I think, also good for me. And of course, together with humor and transparency, honesty.
You don't want to get bored.
Recognition. I don't want to get bored.
Oh, no.
No.
No. No.
No. No. I can definitely.
You have builders and people who like to, how do you say it, maintain the business. Yeah. I'm a builder, definitely.
Yeah. No, I get that.
Yeah.
So what's your biggest ambition for the future?
Oof. On a professional level? Or
Yes.
Of course.
I mean, I know you already have your dream house. She's moved outside of a big city.
Yes, I did.
And she's got like this picturesque dream house now that she still needs to cook for us, by the way.
I know. My ambitions, it would be easy to say, but I think the ambition that I really have, and no matter whether I'm going to fulfill that ambition within Great Place to Work or somewhere else, I really want that if you talk about having a BHAG, every human in the Netherlands, everyone should be working in a place, in an environment where he or she finds themselves safe.
Yeah. Okay.
Because I think it's better for the people, of course.
But let's set a percentage. Let's say 100%. there are 100, I don't know, companies registered in the stock exchange in the Netherlands. At least how many of them should be those kind of companies?
At least 70%.
Okay, so we're going to help you get there.
Yeah.
I like that. What about you, Gwen?
Yeah, I have a goal like that. You know, I think we're here at this table, you know, with the commonalities like you just mentioned.
But you've got ambition.
Also, yeah, of course I have. You know, I wanna make Hexware, a beloved brand with regards to culture, and we're on the way, right? So, but there's still a lot of work to do. That would be fantastic, you know, that in 2 or 3 years, you know, you really see the impact of everything that we do today. Because also this is, you know, cultural building, it's cultural change, obviously. So it takes some time. And as long as I feel that everybody is on board and having the same goal, then my perseverance will not stop. You know? So that is something within my role today. But in general, I would love to add to wherever people are that are creating a better world.
Mm-hmm. So in fact, you want to become a great place to work, right?
We already are. See, you should have known this. I knew. Final question, because we're almost done.
Really?
Can you believe it?
Wow.
Yes, Venka.
Wow.
If you could turn back time and talk to your 18-year-old self, what would you tell her?
Chill out.
Yes.
Tell us. We want to know everything about that.
Yeah. Chill
out. Were you
stressed? No, don't be so tough on yourself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Maybe anxiety. Mm. I saw this t-shirt, by the way, the other day that somebody wore on the back, and it said, if you're anxious, you're not in the moment, something like that.
Oh, yeah. But I'm not sure if it was, for me, it was anxiousness. But I think, you know, growing up, like I've grown up and everybody has his or her story. Try to be yourself as much as possible. Stick to what you believe, and don't change or try to change or be in to fit in somewhere. You know, you're good enough.
Mm-hmm.
You're good enough. That's it. Really.
How can
you're good
we as teach our children this, or our nephews or our nieces? Because everyone who I spoke to and we've been talking about this topic a lot says the same.
Mm.
But how can we make sure that our children don't have to fall in the trap of being not themselves?
Well, I saw this post this morning about, I forgot her name. She's very wise. At least I think she's very wise. And she Nancy mentioned Polian. Something. Was that?
Was that? She said my name.
Oh, very wise woman. Oh, the post was about why do... So we want to raise our children being... Raising your children as being good children is not saying to your children, you have to obey every mature person. Or you have to... give everybody a kiss when they come in, yeah. Or you need to stop crying, or you know, so things that I think are ingrained in at certain levels in our culture, you know, you don't cry, come on, or here is an ice cream, stop crying, or auntie blah blah comes in, you need to give her a kiss, and your kid goes crazy, you know, let that kid not do, wow. make their own decisions, right?
Yeah.
So, and I think society creates an environment where you need to be pleasant, and being pleasant is of course a good thing to do, but not forced if you don't
want to
do something. And I think if you teach your children that at a young age, they feel safe. Again, the word, they feel safe enough.
That's a good one.
When they grow up.
I will try. I think it's hard.
I also think we should teach our children to be rebels more.
Yeah.
I was raised in an environment that I could say whatever I wanted. And of course, I would get rectified if I said too much or when it was really overdue. But I remember a lot of my cousins, they didn't say anything because they were just afraid to even speak up. Mm. So, you know, we talk about rule breakers and, you know, being a rule breaker for me is about being yourself more. But I noticed that if you... The children that are more rebels, the children that are more, you know, even if they don't do well at school, they become the entrepreneurs we need. You know, even if, because it feels like everybody should be in this little box and, you know, let's try and get
rebels and rebels though. I love rebels.
Let's call them rebel with causes.
The fierce ones.
Yes.
I like that too. And I agree with you.
You know that picture of these girls standing at a bar, you know, like a ballet bar, these little girls and they're all in the perfect position. And then the last one is just hanging around. Yeah. Be like her.
Yeah.
Don't fit in line, you know.
Don't
like
fit in line.
Because then you're growing, you're challenging the status quo, which is why we're doing this podcast. So ladies, thank you very much. Let's keep challenging the status quo.
Yes.
And let's keep doing it more authentically. And I hope our listeners and our watchers, they all enjoyed this podcast, and we'll be back for more. Thank you, Gwen.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Venka.
It was lovely.
I think we should do this more often, Venka.
Yes, we should.
See you next time.
See ya.
Bye.